Welcome to After Dark Radio, BrianAlvarez.com. I'm Carl Stern, filling in for Brian Alvarez this week, who has a scheduling conflict. Brian has let me know that there will be a few weeks between now and the end of May where his schedule may not permit him to be on the show every week. And in those weeks, myself or someone else will be filling in, and there's possible we may have a skip week in there somewhere. But I appreciate you joining us for the show. Again, our website, BrianAlvarez.com, and After Dark Radio, we discuss a variety of topics of, let's say, eccentric origin, and I do the weekly news reviews and occasionally co-host the show as well. I have my own website, CarlStern.com, and I encourage you to check that out as well. Last week, we talked about me downloading the Majestic 12 documents from the vault and giving a detailed review of them, and I've done so since the last week's show. I've been reading the Majestic 12 documents, and it's interesting because another story closely linked to the Majestic 12 has just come out as well. It seems like the declassifying of these FBI documents and being posted on the vault, and you can again just Google up FBI the vault and you can get access very easily to these Freedom of Information Request documents that which have recently been declassified and put up. Before I get into talking about the Majestic 12, I think it's somewhat important to cover this other story, which was put up at BrianAlvarez.com, because it links directly into that, and so I'll kind of give you that, and then we'll discuss the Majestic 12 documents themselves. This story was posted about, of all things, believe it or not, we're now tying the JFK assassination into UFOs, and there is an article which now suggests that from the vault, a file was released called the Burn Memo, and it links JFK to the Majestic 12 document 10 days before his assassination. And there's some cryptic language in the document that might lead some JFK conspiracy believers to tying the two together. The article, which can be linked from BrianAlvarez.com, was put up at AOL News, and it's an AOL original article, and written by Lee Spiegel. And the name of the title is The JFK UFO Connection, Bogus Documents or Unanswered Questions. And just to give you a little taste of what the article is, the first paragraph is, "Do you like a good UFO detective story? Well, here's one for you, and it's ongoing, so we don't know the ending. It involves President John F. Kennedy's interest in UFOs shortly before his death, and an allegation that he may have angered officials in his administration when he asked for information on the subject." The article goes on to talk about the recently opened the Vault website from the FBI with a lot of declassified articles and stuff. And, of course, the one that's getting the most attention in our field of research is, of course, the unexplained and UFO documents. Apparently, this is linked to one file called the Burn document. And it... they actually have a copy of it here, and it's linked to another website called Earth Files. And there's more alien news over there that we're going to talk about as well. Apparently, an alien body has been recovered over in Russia. I first got an email on this right after last week's show, and I've just recently watched some of the footage and read a translation of the Russian television news show and seen pictures of the alleged body, but we'll work our way to that as well. The Burn document, called such because Apparently, it was rescued from a fire as it was trying to be destroyed. In the document itself, you can see it has holes in it, and it's kind of burned, and it shows some significant discoloration, but at the same time, it's quite legible. The text of the document, relatively short. It, after some heading, it says, and again, at the top of the document is marked top secret / MJ-12, which refers to the Majestic 12, which is this mysterious council dealing with covering up alleged UFO crashes. The document states, in context of the above, it has become necessary to review and evaluate duplication of field activities in light of the current situation. To eliminate this problem, I have drafted new directives for your review and consideration. Please evaluate each draft on its own merit with the goal of finding acceptable solutions in which we can all agree. And now the next sentence is the one that really caused the firestorm, because as come out quite some time ago during all the JFK assassination investigations and stuff, John F. Kennedy had a code name for the Central Intelligence Agency, in which they referred to him by the code name of Lancer. And the next sentence refers to Lancer. It says, as you must know, Lancer has made some inquiries regarding our activities, which we cannot allow. Please submit your views no later than October. Your action to this matter is critical to the continuance of this group. And then there are several postscripts to this, which are listed tabs A through H, and they are listed. This is presumably refers to some subsequent pages which were tabbed, and they're labeled President's Eyes Only, Need to Know, DOD 5200.1. Tab D is Project Blue Book, which of course refers to the famous Air Force UFO investigation. Tab E, Freedom of Information. Tab F is a little difficult to decipher. It's a series of letters, but it seems to say PSYOP. Tab G is BW, and then finally is Project Environment, although the last part of that is destroyed due to a what appears to be a burn hole in the paper. Handwritten on the paper says, do not remove from safe, and scribbled in cursive writing on the other side appears to say original carbon, so pointing to this being perhaps an original carbon copy of the actual original type document. So, was JFK assassinated because he asked information on UFO activities? And what is the Majestic 12? The Majestic 12, from the documents I read and downloaded here, let me pull them up on the iPad while I'm talking about them, can refer to them, was released from the Balton. The Balton, these have been floating around for quite some time, in fact, since the early 1990s. But what's available at the vault is a 22-page, actually 24-page, according to my count, but it says typed on the front, 22 pages of documents relating to this. Now, as we talked about last week, it is scribbled over in black magic marker with the words bogus across it, which actually makes it difficult to read parts of it, but it's all largely legible. There are blacked out names of agents and so forth, which is standard for any Freedom of Information request documents. And oddly enough, there aren't giant blocks blacked out like it initially appeared. It all does seem to be like mostly related to names and addresses. The very first page, which bears the date of, let's see, September 15th, 1988. Well, actually, it was declassified on August 28th, 1991 by the Freedom of Information Act request. And it says, very briefly, says this communication is classified secret in its entirety, enclosed from the Bureau, which they're talking about the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, is an envelope which contains a possible classified document. And what it seems to be is this is They've received something that appears to be a classified document, and so they have to report this to the FBI. The document goes on to say, on September 15th, 1988, United States Air Force Office of Special Investigations, Special Agent, and then we're blacked out the name, contacted the Dallas FBI with an enclosed document. And then there's a large portion blacked out from where they received the document. And then the last sentence says, claims that an individual at the school whom he refused to name gave it to him, claiming he received it in the mail. The follow-up of it is, Dallas notes that within the last 6 weeks, there's been local publicity regarding Operation Majestic 12, with at least two appearances on a radio talk show discussing Majestic 12 operation, the individuals involved, and the government's attempt to keep it all secret. It is unknown if this is all part of a publicity campaign. A blacked-out agent's name from OSI advises that Operation Blue Book, mentioned in the document on page 4, did exist. Dallas realizes that the purported document is over 35 years old, but does not know if it has been properly declassified. And then is the official request for the Bureau. The Bureau is requested to discern if the document is still classified. Dallas will hold any investigation in abeyance until further direction from FBI headquarters. Then we get the documents themselves, which have bogus scribbled across it. There's a list of what appears to be military dignitaries, admirals, there's doctors, secretaries, generals, several doctors, although the scribble goes across part of their titles. But they all appear to be admirals, generals, and doctors. And there are 12 of these members, and one of which apparently passed away on May 22nd, 1949, and was replaced by someone else in August of 1950. The document itself claims that Operation Majestic 12 is a top secret research and development intelligence operation. And it's hard to read what comes next because of the writing. But it seems to imply they are accountable only to the President of the United States. Operations of the projects are carried out under control of the Majestic 12, or Magic 12, as it's sometimes referred, established by special classified executive order of President Truman on September 24, 1947. Upon recommendation by Dr. Vannevar Bush and Secretary James Forrestal. The Majestic 12 documents are actually pretty short. I mean, it's not like a stack of paperwork, but basically what it says is in 1947, there were apparently some public sightings, and this would be non-military, but civilian aircraft sighted of unidentified flying objects over the state of Washington, and specifically over the Cascade Mountains. There were hundreds of reports of these sightings, according to these papers, and in fact, the papers actually says in the final sentence, public reaction bordered on near hysteria at this time. They go on to say that shortly after that, in fact, the next month, July 7th, 1947, a secret operation was begun to assure recovery of a wreckage that took place in Roswell, New Mexico. And that was, of course, the famous Roswell crash. The documents then go on to kind of describe what happened there at Roswell, or what they speculate happened there at Roswell. And one of the most interesting parts of it says, during the course of the operation, aerial reconnaissance discovered that four small human-like beings had apparently ejected from the craft at some point before it exploded. These had, fallen, it's hard to tell because of the writing, to Earth about 2 miles east of the wreckage site. All four were dead and badly decomposed due to action by predators and again, you can't really make out what says next, to the probably exposure to the elements during the approximate 1 week period which had elapsed before their discovery. A special scientific team took charge of removing these bodies for study. The wreckage of the craft was also removed to several different locations. Civilian and military witnesses in the area were debriefed, and news reporters were given the effective cover story that the object had been a misguided weather research balloon. So, you know, again, this seems like on the surface to be a bombshell type document. But I can tell you from working in the government for 17 years now, this thing, even though you got to take in consideration it's 1940s, language would be different. I don't buy the language used in this document. It seems rather avant-garde at times for the way I know how government people, especially law enforcement and federal investigators and stuff, how they word things. And again, I realize it's 1947, but they just the language used in this thing just doesn't strike me as authentic. And it goes on to say, again, if you take this as true, some of the other real interesting parts of it. Says that there were found examples of what to be a form of writing that were found in the wreckage, and efforts to decipher these have remained largely unsuccessful. And then there are several places in here where it says C attachment, you know, A, B, C, D, E, and those aren't available in this. And it says it is assumed that the propulsion unit was completely destroyed by the explosion which caused the crash, as they are speculating on how this thing flew. They also speculated that this was a reconnaissance craft that was short range in nature, and the reason they suggest that is because of the size and the equipment that was aboard this thing. So they did kind of just speculate that there was a bigger ship somewhere, and that this was just a smaller reconnaissance ship. And again, this next part doesn't strike me as language necessarily the government would use, because there seems to be a real jump to conclusion here, where it goes into talking about a second object which crashed in I can't make out the name of the town, but it's El something Guerrero area of Texas. And this happened apparently on December 6, 1950. There was another UFO crash. And they say essentially that, well, here's, again, I'll just read the sentence. It's on 6 December 1950, a second object, probably of similar origin, impacted the Earth at high speed in whatever this place, Guerrero area of Texas. It says Mexican something after following a long trajectory through the atmosphere. By the time a search team arrived, what remained of the object had been almost totally incinerated. Such materials as could be recovered was transported to the AEC facility at Sandia, New Mexico, for study. I can also tell you from working in law enforcement and the government, we wouldn't jump to a 3-year time difference and immediately assume it was probably similar in origin. In fact, it seems to me like that would indicate it's not of similar origin, especially since a lot of it was incinerated. So, just based on the language and everything, with no other background than that, discounting that they deemed it bogus, it just doesn't strike me as an authentic document. So, anyway, so what did the government have to say about it? Well, here's what it says. Here's the official, in the papers, it says, and this is from 1988, which was declassified, and the letter itself, 1988, to the FBI Dallas office. from FBI headquarters, freedom of information request. Possible disclosure of classified information regarding Operation Majestic 12, Espionage -X, Dallas. This communication is classified secret in its entirety. Reference Dallas Airtel, dated October 25th, 1988. Reference Airtel requested that FBI headquarters determine if the document enclosed by reference Airtel was classified or not. The Office of Special Investigations, U.S. Air Force, advised on November 30, 1988 that the document was fabricated. Copies of that document have been distributed to various parts of the United States. The document is completely bogus. Dallas is to close captioned investigation. And then there's a blank page. And then finally it says, note, this advises Dallas that the document was bogus and the case should be closed. So, again, that's FBI headquarters to Dallas saying, essentially, it's to be closed, that it's all faked. And then there's some other follow-up documents to it. And then there ends up being a a reprint of the several of the documents in the latter part of it that you download with it, so it's essentially a repeat. The whole 24 pages or whatever, are a lot of it is duplication. So, Majestic 12, what I think about it, I think hoax. I think all the evidence certainly supports it being not legitimate. Now then, aside from the JFK being tied into this all now, there has come out a news story out of Russia in the last week. And this apparently happened on March 1st, 2011. At 7 o'clock in the evening on March 1st, 2011, hundreds of people in different locations in the Osinsky district of Russia saw a bright flash in the sky and then a fall of an unknown flying object. And now this was a quote from a Russian television reporter. There are pictures then of a what appears to be an alien or non-human body, speculated as being a foot tall or less. And the caption of those photos say, and again, I'm taking a look at this off of earthfiles.com. Alleged non-human body found on snow where villagers near Irkutsk, Russia, reported unidentified aerial lights on two nights from February 28th to March 1st, 2011, as well as a bright flash of light. No craft debris were ever found by authorities, according to NTV Russian television, but the small non-human body above was videotaped and distributed on YouTube. In comparison to the surrounding environment, the size of the alien body is not much more than a foot or 2 feet if the legs and seemingly very long arms were intact. So there is video of this out there as well. And then you can, on Earth Files as well, take a look at the transcript of the television report. And it's essentially every television report you've ever seen where they're interviewing all these people that saw this thing happen. They thought it was a plane crash. In fact, some of them still felt like it was. Of course, the scientists come on and say it was a meteorite that broke up. And nobody really is offering an explanation as to what this thing is that's pictured. And I have to say, it looks really, really fake. I mean, this looks like some sort of toy or something, like a, I don't know, almost like a Stretch Armstrong body or something was used. It's rather unconvincing, but we'll see. I'm sure that we'll probably hear nothing else of this ever again. So, but it's out there, and a lot of speculation going on YouTube and on the internet and on various websites about whether this was a hoax or a UFO crash or what the story there is. Finally, an interesting email that put me in mind of a book I read several years ago. And this email says, it's from Zach. He says, Are we living in a computer simulation? The math says more than likely yes. And then there is a link to a website called simulation-argument.com. And he goes on to say, I think what is presented on the above site would make for a decent after dark discussion. Just click the link and browse through some of what's there. Seems right up you guys' alley. Well, this is not a new idea. In fact, there was a 1992 book which I read a long time ago. It's a well-known book. It's readily available on Amazon and in most bookstores. I picked mine up in Books a Million, I don't know, years ago. It's called The Holographic Universe, and it's by Michael Talbot. And he makes a argument, scientifically, that we are, in fact, living in a holographic artificial universe. Talbot, in the plug for his book, says there's evidence to suggest that our world and everything in it are also only ghostly images, projections from a level of reality so beyond our own it is literally beyond both time and space. So it's pretty spectacular, and the book actually gets very high reviews. I mean, on the Amazon rating system, it's about 4.25 stars out of 266 reviews, 176 five-star reviews, as compared to 16, 14, and 18 of three-star or less reviews. So less than 60 three-star or less reviews and over 200 four- and five-star reviews. So that's pretty strong, and it's been a long time since I've read the book, and I don't remember all the evidence he presents in there, but I do remember it was a pretty compelling argument. Now, what we have over here at simulation-argument.com is very similar in what the holographic universe presented. The simulation argument is a fairly convoluted, but here's what it proposes. The original paper, which was published in 2003, I believe. It says the earlier draft was circulated in 2001, so it's been out there for a little while. It says, this paper argues that at least one of the following propositions are true. One, the human species is very likely to go extinct before reaching a post-human stage. Two, any post-human civilization is extremely unlikely to run a significant number of simulations of their evolutionary history or variations thereof. Three, we are almost certainly living in a computer simulation. It follows that the belief that there is a significant chance that we will one day become post-humans who run ancestor simulations is false, unless we are currently living in a simulation. A number of other consequences of this result are also discussed. So that's a convoluted way of saying really what this amounts to. I mean, it's just a thesis about why we may in fact just be living in a computer simulation. And it's followed up by several other people's responses to this. There is a quite unhelpful fact on the website, the Simulation Argument Frequently Asked Questions page, and basically it's a lot of big speak about different simple, there's no simple answers to this question at all. It's largely talking over even my head, and I'm sure everybody else's too. And I don't know whether to take this as a tongue-in-cheek sort of thing. I really feel like the simulation argument is, I sort of feel like it's kind of a joke. I mean, I feel like the guy is it's a joke to the guy, and he's just seeing if he can manipulate the, I don't know, the intellectuals and propose some preposterous idea and use mathematics and I guess use mathematics to back it up. I don't know. It's just kind of a odd thing. I do, however, think that the book, The Holographic Universe, is largely serious. In fact, I think the whole book's serious and presents a better, easier to follow synopsis of essentially the same idea, in that we're living in not a organic universe, but a constructed universe by some either extra human intelligence or some futuristic versions of ourselves, and we are, as he puts it, what did he call it, a simulation of their ancestors or whatever it was, however he phrased it. Yeah, ancestor simulations. So while it's quite something to wrap your head around, I don't, I mean, I don't even, how would you even test, I don't know, how would you even test this thing? And one of the answers he gives in the fact is kind of, one of the things that leads me to thinking this is all kind of a joke, in that one of the questions he responds to in his 16 most common questions is that, yeah, it's actually number 9. It says, isn't the simulation hypothesis untestable? And this first paragraph kind of, to me, is the wink, wink, nod, nod kind of answer. He says, there are clearly possible observations that would show that we are in a simulation. For example, the simulators could make a, quote, window pop up in front of you with the text that says, you are living in a computer simulation. Click here for more information. Or they could uplift you into their level of reality. So, again, you know, I don't even know how you type that paragraph with a straight face, so... Okay, here is a response to our last show. This is from Steve. It was posted or sent to me over at the Carl Stern Facebook page. He says, there have been a lot of good After Dark shows, but this one is among the best. I'm still listening. Time travel is one of my favorite subjects, so I'd love a part 2 or part 3 on the topic. Big kudos on the layman's explanations you gave for the different scientific views of the nature of time. Well, thanks a lot for that. And that's one of the things that's always interested me, is because, again, it's kind of... time you sort of want to see as a man-made construct. I mean, you want to see it as just a something that people came up with to mark the progression of seasons and things like that. But to really get down to it and discover that time really is a universal, a natural thing, just as real as gravity, just as real as energy, just as real as any other scientific law, and that it is in fact not a stable thing, that you think of time, well, you know, 1 minute is 60 seconds, and, you know, 60 minutes in an hour, and those things are set in stone. Well, to find out that those things can actually pass at different rates and are affected by speed and gravity, changes things tremendously. One of the best illustrations I've ever seen of how gravity and time gravity affects time is the trampoline illustration, where time is actually not a progression of things, but it's a thing. It's the mat of the trampoline. And when you set a bowling ball in the middle of the trampoline and it sags down, that represents gravity and the distortion of time. So suddenly you have parts of the mat that are closer together. And if the bowling ball were to sink down, or you put an object there that was so heavy that it sank down below where the surface of the mat would be, then the two points of the mat are suddenly closer together. And to look at it and present it in that fashion, you go, well, yeah, I mean, I see how that works. But to think of time acting in that manner, it's something else to wrap your brain around. And so when you then see that time can, for different people, can speed up, slow down, and you can see how things like deja vu and things like precognition and that sort of stuff may have a very valid scientific explanation for it. It's kind of strange. A weird thing happened to me right before I did the last show that got me thinking about it. I was driving through a section here in town, and I went by a place where myself and a friend of mine had sat and talked several years ago. There was a park bench there, and I drove by, and I haven't talked to this person in... they told me it had been 5 years since we had spoken, and I didn't realize it had been that long. But I drove by this bench, was sitting there, and I thought, hey, you know, I haven't talked to them in a long time. I wonder how they're doing. Now, I had not heard from this person in 5 years, and I had not gone 30 seconds maybe, and my phone lit up with a text message from this person. And, of course, it completely weirded me out. But, you know, that, again, is one of those examples. I wonder if that was one of those time lag instances of where universal time, there was a glitch. Maybe there was an increase in gravity or something like that. There was some sort of natural phenomenon that temporarily, very briefly, caused a time glitch right there, and that I actually had got a text message from that person and just didn't realize it yet. And so I thought then about the person sitting on the bench, and so it was those events just ended up being out of order the way I saw them play out versus how they really happened in time. And I know that's kind of whack to wrap your mind around, but you know, it's pretty crazy how stuff like that does happen. And I think everybody's got you know, stories like that. And if you do, send them in. We'll take a look at them and see if we can apply the time lag phenomenon to that. And if you're not, again, if you're not familiar with that, we discussed it on the last show, so go back and take a listen to that. And here's a follow-up from the something we talked about on the last show as well, about Esperanto, the language that supposedly is very easy to learn. It's a constructed language. And apparently there was a movie starring, of all people, William Shatner, that was filmed using Esperanto as the language, and it's available, some clips of it on YouTube. And this comes from Sphinx from the Figure 4 After Dark forum. And he says, I was shocked neither Brian nor Carl had ever heard of it. Not surprising in one way because it was a complete failure, but here's a clip from the movie, from the only movie ever shot in Esperanto starring William Shatner. And the clips of it actually have some subtext to it. And unfortunately on my iPad, because I guess Steve Jobs still hates Flash. Can't actually. I wanted to play a little bit of it, but apparently they don't have that yet in HTML5 on YouTube. So, suck it, Steve Jobs. All right. See if there's anything else we need to cover here. Yeah, here's a follow-up on Zali Hawass. Apparently, he's been sentenced to jail. After being dismissed as Egyptian Antiquities Director, which I understand he got his job back, but now he's going to jail for an unrelated matter. And this is from I don't know, a news website. It's hard to decipher exactly what it is, but it says the Minister of the State for the Antiquities Affairs, Ali Hawass, has been sentenced to 1 year in jail on Sunday for refusing to fulfill a court order over a land dispute. The Egyptian Criminal Court also said Hawass must be relieved of his governmental duties and ordered him to pay a 1,000 whatever Egyptian's currency is penalty. Hawass failed to adhere to a ruling in favor of his opponent over a land dispute where he was in charge of the Supreme Council of Antiquities, which I have to admit is a tremendous job title, being the Supreme Council of Antiquities. The Supreme Council of Antiquities appealed the court ruling, arguing that the land includes monuments and therefore should be treated as government-owned land. Hawass was recently reappointed as Antiquities Chief in the newly formed cabinet of Prime Minister Sharaf. So, Zali Hawass back in the news. Looks like he may spend a year in jail, although I figure that will ultimately, somehow or another, he'll get out of that probably. Okay, so that's going to do it for this week's show. I appreciate you listening. And again, Brian unable to be here this week. I think Brian will actually not be here next week as well. I will actually be in a little better position to do a show next week. I didn't have a lot of heads up on this one, so I kind of had to do it on the fly. So I apologize if we didn't quite hit the mark on this one, but next week should be better. I'll be at a little more prepared for it. So appreciate you listening again, BrianAlvarez.com, and I am Carl Stern with CarlStern.com, and we'll be back again to talk to you next week here on After Dark.